Now we move to look at the second reading, which is Hebrews 2, 14 to 18. You know, in some ways, the letter to the Hebrews is the most daring writing of the New Testament. The author takes the humanity of Christ so seriously, as we're going to see in our text, and yet he realizes the full impact, ramifications, causality of this reality, that God is incarnate. Do you remember how the letter goes? It starts off, polymeros ke polytropos, you know, in many ways, polymeros, in many fashions, in many ways, God has spoken to us through his son. Now, he has spoken to us. I'm going to read it for you now, since I quoted it. Okay. Someone, Philemon. Okay, here we go. Polymeros ke polytropos pale, in many ways, in many fashions, what in times gone by, God spoke to the fathers through the prophets. In this, the last days, he spoke to us in his Son, whom he established as heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. That's the one talking to us. Did you think about that? That's what the Gospels are quoting God. Isn't that beautiful? Okay. Now the text that we have starts with chapter 2, verse 14. Up to this point, we've had all these nice, beautiful texts. You know, it was fitting for him through whom is everything, for whom is everything, bringing many sons to glory, should perfect the author of their salvation through sufferings. Now, the word perfect means many things. One of it is ordain, for reasons that would take me too long to explain now. But I love this letter to the Hebrews, but it is so daring and so powerful. You see, to perfect, you see, through suffering. And for that reason, he, the one incarnate, you see, is not embarrassed to call them brothers, saying, I will announce your name to my brothers, you see? And he goes on there. And finally, the part of our chapter 2 that we have in the reading, since then, the children, those are the children he's just been speaking about, you see, I will, behold, I and the children God has given me. Isaiah is saying that about his disciples. And he's a symbolic future, or symbolic anticipation of the future. The prophet with his children. And now, it's the Savior with his children. And so he quotes this text from Isaiah. You see, now behold me and the children God has given me. And that's the text that is quoted here, you see. Not in the part we have for the... we start with verse 14. You see, since then, the children share blood and flesh. He too, likewise, partook with them, so that through death he might render impotent him who held the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who through fear of death throughout their whole life were held in slavery. Oh, do you know how true that is? And we're afraid of every little hint of death. Some people can go nuts if somebody cuts them off in traffic. It's a little harbinger of death. A little bit of reduction, a little bit of being reduced, cut off in traffic, or fired from a job. And in order to avoid that mini death, anticipation of death, Some people are willing to do anything, you see? And that's what he's saying here. Because it's through death that he might redeem his own death. He might render impotent him who held the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who through fear of death throughout their whole life were held in slavery. If we are not free from the fear of death, we're slaves. Every little overlooking, every missed meal, every insult, every our little signs of death, and we go ape because we're afraid of death. And yet death is a kiss from Christ. Am I going to be scared? Betcha. But you see, this letter is so, I wish we were doing a course on Hebrews, but we're not. I got to get finished with this. You see, for as is clear, he does not take hold of angels, but he takes upon himself the seed of Abraham. God is going to enter into his creation. You'd think he would sort of incarnate himself in one super angel. No. You see, he takes upon himself the seed of Abraham, the child promised. You see? Thus he had to be like his brothers in every way, that he might be a merciful and trustworthy high priest in what concerns God for the expiating of the sins of the people. That's why he had to take this humanity, so that from the very depth of humanity would come this perfect act of love in a human being who is also a divine person, and in and through this humanity bring the whole world back to the Father. Just read what Aquinas has to say about the role of expiation at the Passion. How do you make reparation or expiation for an offense? You have to give back to the offended person something that is of equal or greater worth than that which they lost. Well, as Aquinas points out, at the fall and all the subsequent sins, God loses the love, the trust, the respect, the honor that is his due. Now, who's going to pay that back? Only Jesus, in the act of love in which he dies, gives all that back and superabundantly to the Father. And that's why we're reconciled. And so, that's why so much expiation and other terms are used, you see. That he might be a merciful and trustworthy high priest in what concerns God. You see how all of this is talking about why he had to become a human being. And we're celebrating this on this day when, as a human being, a tiny child, he's born and for the first time sheds his blood and enters in and becomes, you know, a sealed member of the Jewish people. I remember, I think I've told you the story before, one of the young couples, French couples, who lived in Jerusalem when I was there, wanted at a baptism. So this woman, this lovely, lovely woman, came along and at the baptism. And she stood there very respectfully and watched this baptism. Afterwards, she said to me, "That was very nice, but you only pour water. We cut it into their flesh. You're a Jew, and there's no way you're going to hide it from now on, if you're a male. We cut it right into their flesh. Why don't we?" Because we say this goes deeper, does it? It does if we want it to. Otherwise, maybe we should try that. Anyway, merciful and trustworthy high priest in what concerns God for the expiating of the sins of the people, in that he himself has suffered temptation. Okay? Pirasmos. He is able to help those who are being tempted. You see how important that is? His temptation can touch our temptation and free us, especially from the fear of death. That's how we have all these martyrs. The radiant power, love, beauty, energy of the act of loving, which Jesus Christ died, is mediated through his radiant, glorious humanity, and these people who are just weak like we are strong enough to endure torture and death, confessing Christ. And it comes from his death on the cross. And that's why, you see, he still bears the marks of that, as it says in another part of Hebrews. The lamb is standing there, slaughtered. He still bears the marks of his slaughter. To this day, they still radiate life, you see. So that's why on this day of the presentation, this humanity is presented by Mary to the Father. And Jesus, because he's infinitely alive and aware, is offering his own humanity, even though he's still a child, you see. Now that's the mystery. See, this is an act of God in history, and it radiates out to history. It's made present in history by the preaching and by the sacraments. That's what the liturgy, that's why, as we already saw and we'll be seeing more, the liturgy is the primary act of God in history. How does that put here? I can't find it quickly, but it's in the symbol of the faith, the Church confesses the mystery of the Holy Trinity. Such, and then goes on, such is the mystery of Christ revealed and fulfilled in history according to the wisely ordered plan that St. Paul calls the plan of the mystery. That is still in existence. And it all flows to us through the radiant, glorious humanity of Christ, who still bears the marks of his slaughter. He has holes in his wrists and feet and a gashing wound in his side. He will never be without them. They are his trophies. And he's so proud to have loved us so powerfully and freed us from sin, you see? And so, because he has been tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. I mean, like tempted. Give up your faith or I'll shoot you. Or seduced, which is another form. When you're in front of that boob tube and something comes on, mentally just put the cross over it. Does it fit? Then change the station. Should you be watching that? The superficiality, the lie, the falsehood. What is the message of that thing? See? We have only this life, and we better do something about it. Make sure your breath smells good. Make sure you're not too fat. Make sure your hair shines the right way. What about make sure your heart is pure and you're able to love people, especially those in need? Anyway, help those who are being tempted. Every temptation, little or great, involving great or little suffering, Jesus is there to sustain us. And this is the Jesus who went through temptation in the garden and on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? That's the mystery.